Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Josh Heyer. The killing of Iranian General Soleimani is the news of the week, and it comes only a few weeks after the House passed a $738 billion military budget that omitted a number of provisions to limit the president's military powers to go to war with Iran, and the release of the Afghanistan papers, which reveal we've made little progress over the $1 trillion 19-year occupation in the region. So, while some celebrate the death of Soleimani, others find themselves feeling jaded with America's strategy, or lack thereof, in the Middle East. To help us get a better picture of what is going on and what it all means, we welcome back USD's Director of International Studies, Dr. Timothy Shorn. Dr. Shorn, how are you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you.
All right. Oh, go ahead.
No, it's good to be back, and of course, the new year starts off with exciting news.
Yeah, exciting to say the least. So I think I just want to jump right into it. My first question is it legal for the U.S. to assassinate an Iranian general who was in Iraq?
You know, and that's a good question, and that's something that is important beyond the halls of universities and legal scholars, because the United States holds itself up as a beacon on the hill. We have been a major player in creating international law and the law of war. So I think it's important for us to address that. Obviously, in domestic law, there are some questions as well. We generally try to stay away from killing political or military leaders of other countries if we're not involved in a conflict with them. While we may all agree that General Soleimani was certainly an exporter of a rather radical ideology and was the great mind, I guess, if you will, behind a number of violent acts against the United States and others, he still remains a top official in a foreign government. And normally, presidents will have to make a fairly specific legal determination following advice from their cabinet members and legal counsels and others about whether or not it is legal. And I think there's still some question behind that question about that under domestic law. Certainly under international law, the targeting of a foreign official on the territory of another country raises issues of sovereignty. It certainly raises issues of whether it was permissible under the law of war. And so the legal determination has not yet been fully reconciled with the actions of the administration. And I think that's one of the discussions that's going to continue on for quite some time.
And I had actually heard Iraqi Prime Minister Abdul-Mahdi said that he was on his way to a peace mission, a diplomatic rapprochement that Iraq was brokering between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Not to mention there's the discussions about, he was a key member in the defeat of ISIS. That's kind of the Iranian perspective of it anyways. I wonder if you could just talk on that, because the perspective of him being brutal is certainly true, right? But how, what else comes out about after the fact of having got this guy?
Right. Any attempts to broker peace in the Middle East have to include Tehran. They have to include the Iranian government because they're very much involved in what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in Syria, what's going on in Lebanon, Yemen, their relationship with Saudi Arabia in the Persian Gulf, relations with Israel. You cannot have peace and stability in the Middle East without the involvement of Iran. And so by carrying out this assassination, it makes it much more difficult for diplomacy to continue. Certainly, Iran is still very unhappy about the United States withdrawing from the nuclear agreement. And now with the killing of Soleimani, Iran is not going to see itself as being able to play a real role in diplomacy and trying to create a stable Middle East as long as the United States tends to act somewhat unilaterally. So that's going to be an issue. And yes, the Iranians were one of the major, we hesitate to use the word ally, but they were one of the major fighters against ISIS in the Middle East. And a good deal of the successes against ISIS in the Middle East have been a result of the role of the Kurdish forces and the role of the Iranians, the role of the Shia forces in Iraq. And now it's going to call into question their willingness to put themselves on the line to counter ISIS if they're opening themselves up to abandonment or attack from the United States. So one of the winners of this is probably ISIS. It's going to give them the opportunity to regroup because now we have both the Kurds and the Iranians stepping away from the fight, and the United States is going to be focused on other issues as well. So, yes, peace and the fight against ISIS is going to be threatened to some extent by our relations with Iran.
And on that, a war with Iran would most likely take place in Iran, and I would assume that that's something that Iran doesn't want, but how will they respond to this?
You know, and that's an interesting question, too. We know that there have been ongoing protests against the Iranian government, initially rooted in kind of economic issues. It has opened up the kind of political space for criticism of other actions of the Iranian government, especially its rather oppressive and closed nature. When a foreign country attacks another country, people tend to rally around the leadership of that attacked country. Now, in the case of Iran, we may not see all of the people rallying around Ayatollah Khamenei and President Rouhani, but it's going to be much more difficult for them to protest against Iran as a result of this external attack. Consequently, you're going to have a more unified Iran than what we have seen over the last year or two. And while Iran doesn't want to see a war on its territory, through these actions, it makes it more difficult for the people to protest against the government and more likely that they will support the government of Iran if it takes some more aggressive stand against the United States. One of the things that we'll have to watch as well, and this seems to be maybe less of a question today than it was yesterday, and I'll get to that, is what role are Iranian proxies going to play? What role will Hezbollah play? What role will the Assad government play? What role will the Shia militias and the Iraqi government play in this struggle against the United States? Now, earlier today, it was announced by the leadership of Iran that if there is an attack, and well, actually they said there will be a response to the American attack, it will be direct. It will not involve the proxies. It will involve Iranian forces themselves, which then, of course, increases the likelihood of a more direct conflict between the United States and Iran. But I think the Iranian government is probably more prepared for that today than they would have been a year ago as a result of the killing of Soleimani, ironically.
And yeah, I saw the funeral of Soleimani had literally millions of Iranians in the street. I wanted to ask, what does this do to the rebel opposition in Iran who already was looking for change? Your moderate rebels are the people who are just there hoping to see Iran move.
I would argue that it undermines them completely, because now, and we know that Soleimani and his forces have responded fairly violently against the protesters in Iran. But now, if the protesters come out in Iran, the government of Iran can paint them as essentially lackeys of the United States, as supporting treasonous behavior against the government of Iran on behalf of a foreign power, i.e. the United States. And so it's going to make it much more difficult for the people of Iran who were opposing the government to continue to do that publicly. We can also look at what has been going on in Iraq, where we have seen more protests against the government of Iraq, given the fact that the United States carried out this killing on Iraqi territory. It's going to make more people in Iraq, those who maybe were more sympathetic to our presence and those who were not, come together in order to essentially protect the sovereignty of Iraq. Now, one expert on Syria and the region says he believes that this particular attack on Soleimani makes it more likely that we will see increased sectarian violence between Shias and Sunnis. And if that is the case, then there's going to be a lot of upheaval in places like Lebanon and Iraq and perhaps elsewhere, which then, again, makes it more difficult to hold back ISIS. It reduces the role of the U.S. to play a stabilizing power, and it means that, you know, the opposition in Iran isn't going to get the attention it once had because the world's going to be watching elsewhere in the Middle East, and it'll be more dangerous for them to protest anyway. So this killing of Soleimani will have real ramifications on domestic politics in Iran. It's going to have real ramifications for the domestic politics of Iraq and Lebanon. It's going to very likely give ISIS a breathing space, and it's going to raise questions in the minds of our allies of whether or not they want to support the United States if we're going to act unilaterally like this. So it's I think in the long term, it's going to damage stability in the Middle East, damage the possibility of more liberal forces in the Middle East to move forward, and probably damage our standing there as well.
And on that, Iran is not, you know, a rebel militia. They're a legitimate army with friends like Russia and China. I'm wondering if you talk about the expense, if we get involved to the point we're at a war with Iran, what it'd look like in terms of dollars and lives lost, and do we have a definition of success this time that's not how much money we spend? Is there a strategy?
And those are a number of $64,000 questions, to go back to an old game show. What is our strategy? What do we ultimately want to accomplish? We know, at least implicitly, we do not want Iran to acquire nuclear weapons. And they said they don't really have the plan to do that either. Prior to this attack, oftentimes people in the American government talked about regime change. But President Trump has said we're not interested in regime change. So it would seem then that our goal is simply to prevent Iran from kind of acting in its area of influence, kind of promoting its interests in the way it has been doing. Now, if this continues to escalate, then if the United States and Iran end up in a direct conflict, in a direct war, it will be significantly different from what we saw in Iraq, because Iran's military is fairly well trained, especially the Revolutionary Guard or the Republican Guard. They are certainly that entity is well provided for. And it tends to be somewhat more loyal than maybe what the government of Iraq saw vis-a-vis its army in 2003. So it's going to be a more coherent force, better armed, better trained, and fighting to protect their homeland. So that will be an issue. I am not sure that we're going to come to that point, but if we are, we'll see a very different type of conflict. You also kind of raise the issue of Russia and China. This gives the opportunity for Russia to expand its influence even further. If there was a winner in the Syrian civil war, along with the Assad government, it was certainly Russia. They have expanded their bases, their presence in Syria, and therefore the Mediterranean. They're looking for that opportunity in the Persian Gulf as well. And as the United States loses favor with some countries in the Gulf area, it opens a vacuum that the Russians would very much like to fill. And so while I'm not particularly concerned about an all-out war between Iran and the United States at this time, I am certainly somewhat concerned about the likely increased role of Russia in the area and the decreased standing of the United States in the area.
Hmm. Well, one last question, Dr. Shorn. Libya, Yemen, Syria, Somalia and Kenya, Pakistan, Afghanistan. The U.S. is in seven wars currently, involved anyways. to put it bluntly, in your expert opinion, would the U.S. care about Iran and many of these regions if they weren't resource rich?
A number of them they wouldn't, but then we also involve ourselves in a number of those conflicts in order to prevent the spread of such ideologies like that which ISIS espouses, a very, very kind of radical Sunni ideology. At the same point, same time, we're also concerned about Iran's more revolutionary Shia ideology being spread. If we're not involved in one country, and I don't want to say that I'm a believer in the domino theory here at this point, that the fall of one country puts a further country at risk. But as we watch what's going on in Libya and Mali, we know that the spread of ISIS-friendly forces can take advantage of war-torn areas, unstable areas, and as they gain a hold in one country, they're able to expand attacks into another country. And so we want to ensure that some of these forces do not spread. Obviously, oil strategic location matters, but at some point we want to be seen as a force of stability and security as well.
Dr. Shoren, they're cutting us off. Thank you so much for coming on the air. Thank you, everyone, for listening to In the Moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio.